Hey everyone, this is Seriously Risky Business, the podcast where we talk all about macro level cybersecurity issues and government policy and all that stuff. My name's Patrick Gray and I'm joined, of course, by Tom Uren.
G'day, Patrick. How are you?
Good, good. And yeah, for those of you who are unfamiliar, this is the podcast we record after we edit Tom's weekly newsletter, which is the Seriously Risky Business newsletter. You can find a link to that one at risky.biz/subscribe. It's on Substack. And yeah, Tom, we've just wrapped up the edit of this week's edition. You covered a bunch of interesting stuff. I will tell listeners as well that although I'm like the publisher and managing editor for all things Risky Business, I never quite know what I'm going to get when you file, right? I'm like, we might talk on a Monday and I'll say, hey, maybe you want to write about this. And you say, yeah, cool, cool. That sounds interesting. And then I open it up and it's something completely different. And that's what happened today when I opened it up and I saw this magnum opus here on information operations, specifically Iranian, Chinese, and even UK information operations. And you've written a piece here that compares the different approaches that each of these countries takes to information operations. So let's start with your breakdown of what Iran is doing in this space, because it's the most compelling, I think, in the analysis that you've written, simply because Iran seems to be changing its tradecraft in response to things that people are doing to it, which I found interesting.
Yeah, so Microsoft released a report just this week about... they called it cyber-enabled influence operations. So the way the Iranian actors seem to have shifted over the last little while is from just cyber operations to cyber operations where they try and, depending upon your point of view, amplify, exaggerate, embellish with information operations.
Embiggen.
Where they'll... you know, do some publication, like promote it on Telegram and then try and amplify it. It's kind of interesting because the Microsoft report has a couple of different viewpoints in there. The one I like is that they're all about exaggeration because their cyber operations just aren't that good to begin with. So this isn't to totally diss Iranian actors, but they contrast what Iran has done with what has been done to Iran in the report. So there's several examples. One of them is that an Iranian seaport was disrupted, and that disruption was significant. Like, it stopped sea traffic and land traffic. So that's pretty significant. Iran tries to retaliate against Israel, and that attack doesn't really go anywhere. Similarly, they cite a report where...
But was there an information operations component to the attack, I guess, is the question.
All these things, they try and amplify them on social media.
Yeah.
So they try and make a big deal out of them.
Yeah, so they didn't get very far, but they didn't run an information operation to sort of suggest that they did.
Right? Yeah.
Like, that seems to be the theme that keeps popping up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The question I have is, what's really going on here? Is it these cyber actors just trying to make their operations look more successful? Is it actual direction from above to say, you know, do whatever you've got and then amplify it to have more significant effect?
Yeah, or is it the operators themselves trying to make it look bigger to keep their bosses happy, right? Like,
yeah,
it's impossible to know.
Yeah, exactly.
At this stage anyway.
Yeah.
Look, I just before we keep talking about it, there's another example in here which I think is very, very funny. You know, there was that anti-Iran group, Edelate, I don't even know how you pronounce that, but it was, you know, it was Israel, let's just say it. It
yes.
was probably Israel. The ones who hacked into the Evin prison, and they released that CCTV footage of, like, inside the CCTV room as the monitors all flicked over to some protest image and whatever. And it was, you know, it was a spectacular hack and information operation and very, very cool. And, you know, we covered it at the time. I can't
yep.
remember what it was, but, you know, it was real movie hacking stuff by the likely Israelis. And then Iran decided to adopt similar tradecraft after its embassy in Albania was raided by the Albanian police. They decided to, you know, strike back with the cyber and influence operation, where they did a destructive attack against some Albanian police systems and then leaked CCTV footage of the Albanian border crossing. Now, the problem is that watching footage of panicked prison guards as their monitors flick over to some menacing message on their monitors. I mean, that's good viewing, right? Yep. The golden rule of television or video, don't be boring. What Iran leaked was a bunch of bored border guards standing around noodling about on their smartphones while there was a queue.
Yeah, that's right. It's,
which is, you know, I mean, so you've emulated the tradecraft, but you've kind of missed the point, I think, is what you get across here.
Yeah, I think those people could use with some good strategic communications or marketing people. And it's in that border crossing footage, it's hard to know what's going on. Is it just that the guards are just looking at their phones and there's this massive queue because that's what border guards are like? I think that's entirely plausible as well. And so you really don't know what to make of that. So that's the hypothesis I like, that they're exaggerating what they're actually doing, because what they're doing is not all that impressive. Microsoft does say that their tradecraft is developing. So they give some examples of both cyber operations and influence operations where they're developing new skills. So, you know, they're picking up on end-day vulnerabilities faster. They've got custom tooling, and they've started to use victim websites for command and control. So those are some of the cyber operation examples of improvements.
When we see some of these orgs get there, right? Like the North Koreans always had good tradecraft, but they didn't have scale. And normally good tradecraft is hard to scale, and they've done it, you know? So it's really easy to write off threat actors, you know, in the case of North Korea, okay, they got good people, but there's not many of them, and now they've got lots of good people. And in the case of Iran, it seems like they've got a lot of people, but they're not that good, but they are getting better. So, you know, the fear is that soon we're going to be dealing with an Iran that's very capable, because these people learn from each other as well in these organizations that do these attacks. So the concern is that they are actually, you know, legitimately getting better.
Yeah, yeah. So even though the hypothesis I like is the one that kind of makes fun of Iran, I think that's actually a mistake.
Dismissive.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the report mentions an attack that destroyed on-prem and cloud environments that you've spoken on the main Risky Biz show, and that's an example of more advanced tradecraft. Now, that was also tied to an influence campaign about Israel's policies towards Palestinians. So yeah. that seems
so
to
this
be
is
kind
like
of
we've
standard.
Struck, we have struck this blow for the people of Palestine sort of vibes, right?
Yep. And so the interesting thing, I think, also in this report is that Microsoft has a diagram of how all these different personas, and there's a lot of them, over a dozen, are tied to different threat actors that also have direct links to either the Ministry of Intelligence and Security and the IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. So there's a Microsoft at least thinks that there's this sort of strong linkage between government bodies to threat actors to cyber personas. So yeah, that's kind of, I guess that's not surprising, but it's good to know that at least someone thinks that.
So, yeah, someone who's in a position to make a, you know, pretty educated guess.
With a lot more telemetry than I have personally.
Yes. Yeah. And Microsoft have so much telemetry, just tremendous insight. Now, look, people can go and read what you've written on Iran there. I think we've covered that enough. You also had a look at a couple of contrasting approaches, right? And the Chinese one is interesting because, you know, in this piece, you argue that China hasn't really coupled its information operations to its cyber operations. They tend to be run kind of in parallel, right?
Yeah, so that's one of the standard things for Russians to do, for example, is hack and leak. And that's also happened in Iran. And it's kind of curious to me why the Chinese don't do that. And my guess is partly they've got an apparatus, a tremendous domestic apparatus to control the information environment. And I think that's kind of...
Why do hack and leak propaganda when you control everything anyway?
Yeah, and that's just not what they do at home, right? Mm. So that's not the... Maybe it's just not the done thing. It makes sense to expand that abroad. The third thing is that they've also got tremendous economic leverage, and that seems to be the tool that they use most of all when they want to try and influence people rather than hack and leak. And I guess Russia and Iran don't have that as an option. Like they've got.
That's just an interesting thought that powerful players don't need Hack and Leak.
Yeah, so that's one theory. The campaigns have interests that are aligned with Chinese APTs. So, in an ASPE report that was released last week, they talk about some of the narratives being to promote the idea that the US is a cyber hegemon and that it's just stealing stuff from everywhere, including China and elsewhere. Now,
it's such a funny case. What do they call it? Projection, right? Like every time you see this, you see China complain. You remember when they quote unquote doxed Rob Joyce as the head of TAO?
Yeah.
Like it was this big revelation when I think in 2016 he was doing talks saying, "Hi, my name's Rob Joyce. Hi, I'm the head of TAO," you know?
Yeah.
So they've done some really... And that, when was that? I can't even remember if that was this year or last year, but it's recent.
Yeah, I think it's
where
this
they've
year.
Been doing a lot of information operations about the United States being this terribly irresponsible cyber actor. And as I say, it's just like, talk about projection.
And that narrative aligns with the interests of those kinds of APTs to some degree. But I think it's more a government narrative. They want a blunt criticism of China's cyber espionage efforts. The ASPE report thinks that it's also about supporting Chinese cybersecurity services
into Southeast Asia. I thought
that was interesting too. And but like my initial thought as a Western, indoctrinated Western person is that surely no one would buy Chinese cybersecurity services. But then there's a whole swathe of the world where that narrative that the US is an overbearing hegemon does resonate with people. So the third country I looked at is actually the UK. And so probably the first thought for many people is that, hang on, the UK doesn't do influence operations. But I mean, really, that's what the NCF have said that they do. They aim...
I love how you actually found a way to shoehorn this one in there. Because what they described in their sort of doctrine, when they outlined their doctrine, was, I think you called it, messing with people's heads, right?
Yeah.
But they were talking about specific targets, right? Or specific small groups or teams.
Yep.
And going in and disrupting them with mind tricks, right? And what you argue here is, that is an influence operation. It might be smaller in scale and very tightly targeted, but it is an influence operation.
Yeah, and I guess probably the most significant difference is that both the Chinese and the Iranian examples aim to influence large groups of people by manipulating social media or mainstream media by trying to get stories placed in mainstream media that they kind of artificially promote, whereas the UK vision is to mess with computer systems. So not the media, but the computer systems that people interact with to get them to achieve the same effect, to get them to believe something about the world that's not true, and therefore to get them to behave differently.
Yeah, this is like platinum tier influence, right? Influence just for you,
it's
our target.
Surgical.
Yeah, that's right.
And so you've got different countries aiming for the same effect, just at different scales and using similar methods, but using different, different tactics or techniques, I guess, media versus specific computer systems. And so my conclusion, I like the NCF UK approach, mostly, I think, because it's got the best chance of working because it's smaller and very targeted. And also from a human rights point of view.
Come on, they kind of tick off different objectives though, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the UK, the head of the NCF, James Babbage, he said that, look, mass disinformation is not a thing that we're getting into. And that's because... it kind of stems from the human rights point of view that you shouldn't be going around deceiving large numbers of people unless, I guess, in a democracy, unless there's a really good reason to do so. Like, it has to be really, really good. And so
Thomas Ridd pointed out in his book that it's quite corrosive to government as well, because the people controlling the government wind up believing their own disinformation because they're not necessarily in the loop on what is disinformation and what is not. And it gets very confusing.
Yeah, yeah. And I think... for me, that kind of mass media manipulation, you really have to get to some sort of existential crisis before you'd consider that sort of thing.
What is it I was reading the other day about how, you know, how we're all told carrots give you good night vision?
Yeah, I think that's a lie, isn't it?
That was a lie from the British because they wanted to explain
radar.
Why their air force was so good, because they had radar.
Yeah.
Right? So they made up all of this bullshit about how the reason their pilots were able to shoot down so many German planes is because they were eating their carrots. And they did a supporting campaign with this one, like, everybody eat your carrots. It's good for your night vision.
Yeah.
You know? And this was all to deceive the Germans and try to stop them from figuring out that they had this wonderful new technology of radar. I have no idea if it worked, but it's a cool story.
I think the collateral damage there is all the children who've been forced to eat carrots.
Yeah.
Ever since then, for no reason.
Well, there's worse things to eat. Speaking as a father of small children, I'm gonna stick up for making kids eat carrots, Tom. But yeah, so no, look, that's an interesting, you know, it was really interesting to just contrast, you know, three different countries' ideas of, you know, what is an influence operation. Back on China for a moment, another thing that you actually covered this week, I did discuss this briefly with Adam Boileau, but I cut it from the regular show because I knew that you and I were going to talk about this today. China has broadened its counter-espionage law to basically say that any information of relevance to the national interest or security is now covered by this espionage offence. And like, if you obtain these documents, and, you know, obtain is a little bit vague as yep. well, then you're in trouble. So basically it criminalizes a whole bunch of stuff, right? And we've already seen raids on like due diligence firms in China even before this law has come into effect. It comes into effect on July 1. But essentially what you've argued here, and it's you've convinced me, this is a law designed to control the way information moves around in China. In business, in academia, in media, basically if you're out there soliciting any sort of information that, you know, the Chinese government doesn't want you to, you are now running, well, you will be running afoul of their new espionage law. I mean, that's the upshot here, isn't it?
Yeah. I think there's been a long time where people I know who do research on China in who read Chinese have said that the Chinese internet, there's all sorts of stuff there that they don't say overseas. And so there was this kind of feeling that if it was written in Chinese on the Chinese internet, no one in the whole world would ever see it. And so that played out in terms of a lot of the open source research that's been done on Uyghur detention in Xinjiang. Uyghurs being shipped around different parts of the country, essentially as kind of, I don't know, maybe slave labor is slightly too strong, but forced labor for different factories. Mm. And that was all just on the Chinese internet. So if you spent time researching, you could find all that stuff. And so I think part of this is definitely a reaction to the realization that, you know, just publishing stuff willy-nilly on the internet hasn't worked out all that well. So the actual cyber-related parts of the law actually don't look all that different from what you might find in Australia or the West.
I mean, they've ostensibly targeted this at foreign intelligence organizations, and I'll read from it here. So when it talks about cyber stuff, like network intrusions, it says network attacks, intrusions, obstructions, control, or disruptions targeting state organs, units involved with secrets, or critical information infrastructure that are carried out, prompted, or funded by an espionage organization and its agents, or, and this is the important part, carried out by agencies, organs, individuals, or other collaborators domestically or outside the PRC border. I mean, what is a collaborator, Tom? It's certainly not defined here, you know. Is it witting or unwitting, or, you know, like it's very broad.
It's very broad, and I don't think it captures a lot more than just espionage. So it's pretty much anything that does anything with, you know, what we define as a state organ or information infrastructure, carried out essentially by anyone, anywhere. So, I mean, that's extremely broad. I think the actual kind of intent to some degree makes sense in that, like, it makes sense to have a counter-espionage law where people stealing stuff are breaking the law. Now, in practice, when it comes to cyber intrusions, mostly the law, you know, whether you've got a law or not doesn't make any difference because people do it anyway. I guess what I thought was, though, that the clampdown on information is occurring already, as you said, in advance of the law being signed. And it's just a really good illustration of how the PRC uses laws to both signal what is right and also to justify what they want to do anyway. So I've heard that described as rule by law, not rule of law. And so this law is written in a way that a government body can basically apply it to just so much that you can discretionarily apply it when you want to. So if you don't like what a research body is doing, you can apply that law to them.
Yeah, and I will say too that I was speaking earlier today with someone who does consulting for American organizations that operate in China. For large organizations that operate there, and those raids that we mentioned have certainly caught the attention of American businesses that operate over there. So it certainly is being perceived by the West as a tightening of the rules, right? To be basically like, just don't do anything to annoy the government.
Yeah.
And they haven't really given great guidance on what that looks like. But yeah, don't do anything to annoy the government.
Yeah, those raids were of either corporate intelligence or due diligence firms. And so that's not espionage. That's just something that the Chinese government has decided that it doesn't like anymore. Doesn't like people doing research.
Doesn't like people poking around and figuring stuff out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, look, the last thing we want to touch on briefly this week is, it's just a short item in the newsletter, but there was a recent Lawfare podcast with the Deputy Director of the CIA, David Cohen. And he was speaking about Section 702, which is, of course, is up for renewal. Last time it came up for renewal, basically it got kicked down, you know, the can got kicked down the road for another 6 years, and that time is up, and it's coming up again. And it's, you know, it's playing out the same way it did 6 years ago, which is the IC going, you know, for God's sakes, this is really, really important. What's interesting about this podcast interview, though, is that Cohen goes into a lot more detail than usual about what the intelligence community actually uses 702 to do.
Yeah, I was actually really surprised. So I couldn't sleep. I was listening to this podcast in the hope that it might put me to sleep.
unfortunately, we regret to inform you it was very interesting.
Yeah, that's right. And so this part, it just goes into a tremendous amount of detail that's unusual. Usually they'll say, you know, critical national security interests. But he talks about, for example, cyber operations used to identify and protect against cyber operations from China, Russia, Iran, North Korea. It's been used to prevent US technology being acquired by adversaries for weapon systems, to uncover atrocities committed by Russia in Ukraine, including the murder of non-combatants and the forced relocation of children from Ukraine to Russia. Used to identify foreign spies and protect US ones, and also to produce intelligence on foreign drug cartels. So that's really a tremendous sweep, and it doesn't go into exactly what the intelligence was, but I think giving the kind of broad overview
actually coming out and saying this is the sort of stuff we use it for. I mean,
I think
it's good. Yep. It's good that they're under a bit of pressure to do this, because too often when the conversation around 702 happens, like, the broader community just talks about it through the lens of like what Glenn Greenwald wrote about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's okay, like, we want to make sure that there's good oversight or whatever, but fundamentally 702 should not go anywhere. It is necessary.
I think removing it would be tying one hand behind your back. I think it's one of the great strategic advantages the US has in intelligence collection, just because of the way the global telecommunications system built out. And so it would be stupid.
Well, and the social media companies and you know, everything, right? Like, yeah, and you see these news stories about like, oh, the FBI did millions of queries, right? And I'm sure that some of them were not legit, right? And that's where the oversight part comes into it. They shouldn't be able to curiosity their way into the 702 data set. And they probably do a bit of that. But when you see that there were millions of queries, quite often that's looking for things like C2 traffic, you know, involving a botnet or whatever. And it just looks scary in the annual report when you see that there were millions of queries. But, you know, when you drill into it, most of the use, the overwhelming majority of the use of this authority is legitimate and good.
Yeah. So these, I guess the, like at the very top level, the question is it doing more harm than good? Is it being abused to persecute US people? I'd be very surprised if that happens at any sort of scale, or persecute them illegally, I suppose. There's always lawful. I don't know. Is it persecution if you arrest a criminal? But anyway, the funny thing
is, and I think you and I have had this conversation privately before, is like the big thing, the big abuse that came out through the Snowden leaks wasn't really anything to do with NSA, right? Like it was DEA who were using foreign intelligence stuff to parallel construct evidence for courtrooms. And that's like really alarming. And now, of course, they're going after like cartel people with this, right? So, you know, cry me a river for the cartel people, but you can't have law enforcement agencies doing parallel construction for courtrooms. Like that's, you know, that's wrong. That's wrong. And yet no one got interested in that at all. It was all just like, oh, PRISM and all this and all that, you know.
Well, I think crazy. The thing is that that's exactly why you put your finger on it. No one's going to cry a river for, you know, a cartel.
No one cares about due process when it's a cartel leader.
That's right. Yeah. That's and right. I think that a lot of this is about how you feel about those issues rather than what's actually happening.
There are allowable abuses. Tolerable abuses. You know,
I've killed lots of people, but they were all bad.
Yeah, right. Okay. The Dexter doctrine or something.
Yeah, yeah. I think I would imagine that there'll be a classified brief that goes into more detail about exactly what the story behind those examples is. And I would be extremely surprised if it's not very compelling to anyone who actually pays attention to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the thing with those sort of briefings, isn't it? When you see some very, very pale-looking senators or whatever who've just who've just seen the scary classified slide deck. All right, Tom, you're in. Great discussion this week. Fantastic to talk through your work in this podcast. Great stuff, and I'll talk to you again soon. Cheers.
Thanks a lot, Pat. See ya.